Hey, Tokers, this is Radical Russ. There's only one thing I love as much as fine Oregon Bud, and that's spicy food so hot it'll peel paint. Thanks to the generous sponsorship of HerbAgeDesigns.com, I'm putting both my true loves to the test to support the launch of Normal Show Live. It's the El Jefe Chicken Hot Wings Eating Contest here in Portland, and the contest benefits the American Red Cross, another favorite charity of mine. You can help. We're signing up pledges for the contest starting as low as 25 cents per wing, up to the 20 wings I'm pledging to eat. You can win, too. The top money entry and a randomly selected entry win HerbAge prizes and one of my Starfish Designs Gandalf-style pieces of glass art. Send in your entry to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Contest and tell me how much you'll pledge per wing, up to 20 wings. Also include your real name, age, and shipping address should you win the prize. Only entries from adults 18 and older will be accepted. Starfish Designs prizes will not be shipped to Idaho, Pennsylvania, or Indiana. It's Wednesday, August 26th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. The time is ticking down to the debut of Normal Show Live on Labor Day weekend, Saturday, September 5th. And as we get ready for that, we're having to get all the behind-the-scenes activities taken care of. We are doing the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest on Saturday, and we're starting to get a lot more pledges in for it, thanks to all of you who are pledging. And I want to give you an idea what those pledges will cover. You may not know this, but on podcasts and internet distribution, you can't use commercial music without paying for the licensing. That's why you hear so many tunes here on the Stash, like in our Daily Toker tunes, that are considered pod-safe music. And that just means that it's not licensed by any of the big licensing companies, and it's usually independent artists. There are some exceptions. We use the Cheech and Chong song for Daily Toker tunes because Tommy Chong's on our advisory board, so we figure we probably have permission for that. But when it comes to licensing this music for Normal Show Live, I really, really, really want to use commercial music. I think it makes an excellent statement, and considering how much great commercial music was made by people who use cannabis, it only seems appropriate. Well, this has led to a legal tangle. First of all, if you want to get licensing for live performances, which is what the Normal Show Live will be, you have to go through ASCAP and BMI. These are two organizations that represent songwriters. About half the songs you would use are licensed by ASCAP, and about half are licensed by BMI, so you usually end up getting both licenses. Well, today I learned that also you have to get a license from an organization called the Harry Fox Agency if you want to store those recordings, like a podcast, for distribution later. So, the money that you're donating for the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest will be paying for our commercial music licensing. So every time you hear a familiar tune on Normal Show Live, you can thank yourself for pledging to get it on there. Well, let's check our calendar of events at normal.org/calendar and find out. On Thursday, both myself and Paul Armentano will be appearing on the Casper Leach program Time for Hemp Live. You can find that at timeforhempradio.com. That's the number 4. Also, Paul will appear on KSFR Radio's The Journey Home with Diego Mulligan at 4:35 Pacific Time. Check the normal calendar for more information on that. On Friday, the Cannabis Common Sense TV show will be on Portland Cable Access as well as streamed live on Ustream.tv. That's the letter U, stream.tv. This show will be a one-hour filmed show with film clips all about Seattle Hemp Fest, interviews and focusing on the bands and all the events there at this most recent Hemp Fest. And speaking of Hemp Fest, on Saturday, Kansas City Hemp Fest is taking place. This will be at Emmanuel Cleaver II Boulevard and Oak Street in Kansas City, Missouri, beginning at high noon. There will be a cannabis awareness and information seminar in Levittown, Pennsylvania, sponsored by Philly Normal. Check the calendar for a map and more information. There'll be a rally at the Capitol in Denver, Colorado on August 29th. This will be at 3:30 p.m. local time. Again, check the calendar for more info. And, of course, on Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, I'm competing in that Fire on the Mountain Buffalo Wings El Jefe Hot Wing Eating Contest. Check out their website at portlandwings.com. Are you
good? It's a normal shout-out.
Our shout out today goes to the great state of Kansas. I had someone in the Fresh Stash today saying, when can I join Kansas Normal? What's up with Kansas Normal? Well, we don't have a Kansas Normal yet, but we really would like to. The folks at Kansas City Normal are across the state line in Missouri, so that's not exactly going to help. So we need some activists who are interested in starting Kansas Normal, or maybe some local versions, Lawrence Normal, for example, Topeka Normal. If you're in any of those areas in the great state of Kansas, send me an email at stash@normal.org. I'll help you get started. Basically, we just need five of you to form your board of directors, your nonprofit corporation, and apply for affiliation with Normal. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines and the sad tale of the passing of a double amputee diabetic in Vancouver, British Columbia, who was evicted from her senior assisted living facility for her medical use of marijuana. The director of the New Mexico Medical Marijuana Program quits and has her eye on becoming a nonprofit dispensary provider there in the state of New Mexico. She also has some complaints about the current provider. And an outbreak of reefer madness in Alabama, we feature the writings of Robert DeWitt. Today is the day for your regular dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We'll be talking about that story from yesterday, the study that claims that frequent marijuana use leads to male sexual dysfunction. For our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, it's Reggae Wednesday, and we have Kaya Bamba with the song I Live My Life. And for our normal newsmakers, we're going to dig back into the archives and start to feature some interviews with people who will be appearing at the Normal National Conference, September 24th through 26th, in San Francisco. This one features PBS travel writer and European expert Rick Steves and his discussion with the Stash founder and former host, Chris Goldstein, from 2007. All of that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world. in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Double amputee diabetic evicted for medical marijuana dies in Vancouver. From The Province. Marilyn Holston's last days on Earth were a living hell, according to her sister, Moira O'Neill. In frail health, the almost blind, diabetic, double amputee was ordered evicted from her apartment because of her need to smoke marijuana to control her pain. Holston, age 48, died earlier this month from a heart attack. O'Neill said, quote, "For a whole year it went on. It was an unbelievable way to treat someone in her health," end quote. Holston lived in a building operated by Anavets Senior Citizens Housing Society in the 900 block of East 8th Avenue in Vancouver. Many of her neighbors told her they did not smell marijuana coming from her apartment, her sister said. But even though Holston eventually obtained legal permission to smoke marijuana to deal with excruciating phantom pains, Anavets sought her eviction because of the smell of pot. Quote, "It was a witch hunt," end quote, said O'Neill, who said her sister had to move from her fifth-floor apartment to a ground-floor suite 2 years ago after her first leg amputation for her own safety. Quote, "They knew she smoked marijuana before she moved down to the other suite," end quote, said O'Neill. Quote, "She was in the hospital most of the time with her amputation. She was gone 5 days a week, in dialysis 6 hours a day," end quote. Holston fought her eviction at the British Columbia Residential Tenancy Branch arbitration hearing in June, but lost. The night before she died, Holston visited her older sister. O'Neill said, quote, "We resolved that she was going to stay with me in my small, one-bedroom apartment. She couldn't take opiates. They made her totally unable to function. Morphine made her throw up, and she was a diabetic, so she had to eat all the time," end quote. Holston made every effort to contain the smell from her marijuana use from her neighbors. She originally did not have a doctor's recommendation to use medical marijuana, so in her original eviction notice, the administrator, Mary McLeod, wrote, quote, "Marijuana use is still against the law, and as part of your tenancy agreement, you agreed you would not participate in illegal activities," end quote. She then signed an agreement that she would only medicate outdoors, but the center gave her another eviction notice after someone smelled marijuana in the public areas of the building. Then, Mark and Jody Emery of Cannabis Culture magazine donated to her a volcano vaporizer to help alleviate the problem. However, the arbitration hearings would hear none of that and had her evicted anyway. A double amputee who pledged to only vaporize, exhaling outdoors even, her legally recommended herbal remedy for excruciating phantom pains. "I understand that some people do not like the smell of cannabis, and to be fair, we should respect their rights too. However, will the Anavets Center evict their residents for cooking that awful-smelling kimchi, sauerkraut, or menudo? Are residents allowed to smoke cigarettes?" And I have a call into the Anavets Center asking just that question. "Can residents keep pets, even smelly kitties who miss the litter box? Can residents douse themselves with heavy amounts of perfume or cologne? Something tells me that residents are allowed to create all sorts of offensive smells in public areas, just not the skunky sweet smell of burning cannabis." Well, Cannabis Culture is calling for a protest of this on Wednesday, September 2nd, from 12 to 6 p.m. Pacific, at the Anavets Senior Citizen Housing Society's building at 951 8th Avenue East. New Mexico's medical marijuana coordinator quits, questions dispensary practices. From the Santa Fe Reporter. New Mexico's medical cannabis program coordinator has resigned, and due to budget constraints and a hiring freeze, the State Department of Health has not refilled the position yet. Melissa Malam, who has served as the program's administrator since the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act went into effect in 2007, left the position in mid-July. Malam cites the recent birth of her daughter as one reason for leaving her position. Another is she hopes to form a nonprofit to produce and dispense medical cannabis. So far, 540 patients have received licenses, but only one nonprofit, the Santa Fe Institute for Natural Medicine, has been approved. As a result, the majority of patients can only acquire cannabis through illicit means. This is part of Milam's motivation to form a nonprofit. Milam tells the Santa Fe Reporter, quote, "The program has been slammed so hard, but I really am proud of it. I want to make it better, and that's why I'm interested in taking care of patients on the nonprofit side. I feel like I've done all I can do for them on the government side," end quote. While proud of the structure of the program, Milam says she is disappointed in the practices exhibited by the single licensed producer. For one thing, Milam says, SFINM's prices are comparable to what would be paid on the street. More disturbing, she says, are reports that SFINM requires patients to meet delivery drivers in parking lots in order to obtain their medication. Milam says, quote, "Asking people to meet you in a parking lot? I mean, how is that any different from a drug deal?" end quote. Las Vegas, New Mexico-based cancer patient and medical cannabis license holder Robert Jones tells the Santa Fe Reporter he agrees with Milam's evaluation of SFINM. Quote, "They said it's going to cost $400 an ounce, and they won't be delivering to Las Vegas, so you'd have to meet them somewhere else," Jones says. "I'm not capable of driving to Santa Fe, and I can't afford $400," end quote. Dispensaries exist in California, Colorado, Washington, Rhode Island, and New Mexico, operating collectives, co-ops, and in the case of the latter two states, state-licensed nonprofits. Dispensary supporters often proclaim they are providing safe access to patients to acquire medicine without dealing with the dangerous and unpredictable black market. For that, they should be commended. However, if you can't afford $400 an ounce for plant material that costs $1 to $2 to produce outdoors or $10 to $20 to produce indoors when grown in volume, it doesn't matter if it's sold by the Santa Fe dispensary or Sam the weed dealer in the park. You have no access to medicine. To be fair, the dispensary's economics are dictated by the black market. They can't sell marijuana at less than street value, or buyers will sell it on the street for profit. They can't buy marijuana at less than street value, or the sellers won't sell to the dispensaries when they can make more on the street. The notion that more dispensaries will lead to more competition is also ludicrous, not only based on the evidence of 600-plus Los Angeles dispensaries not leading to a reduction in price there, but also because no matter how many dispensaries and patients there are 10 to 20 times that many black market buyers and sellers. Only when marijuana is fully legal, when all sellers are in open competition, when all buyers can avoid high prices by growing their own, when all growers are able to grow huge outdoor fields, only then will patients truly have safe and affordable access to medicine.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Robert DeWitt, marijuana legalization is not a bright idea. I know this is bound to shock you, but there is some reefer madness in Alabama. This latest epidemic is courtesy of Robert DeWitt, writing in the Tuscaloosa News.
America's drug laws sprang from the social problems caused by unregulated drug sales. Powerful narcotics like cocaine and heroin were sold over-the-counter during the 19th century, and addiction became a nationwide problem. Enforcement usually involves society's fringe elements or dregs, until the 1960s counterculture movement made pot and LSD its mascots.
That's most certainly not true. In the 19th century, you could buy any drug you wanted, and there was about 1% of the population who had an addiction problem. Today, all those drugs will get you thrown in jail, and we have about 1% of the population with an addiction problem.
The most recent shift in attitude seems to me as much a product of weariness with the war on drugs. Federal, state, and local agencies pour billions into enforcement, and the problem seems to grow every year. The taxpayers bear the burden for a growing prison population, and the attitudes of the people convicted never seem to change. It seems like an exercise in futility.
So, gee, you think maybe we ought to stop it?
I have nothing to gain from the legalization of drugs. I have no desire to venture beyond the bounds of 12-ounce cans of American-style lager and the occasional gin and tonic, margarita, or Bloody Mary.
In other words, you don't care about marijuana legalization because your choice of a much more dangerous drug is already legal.
I smoked pot 6 to 8 times in my college days and never liked it. It always left me with an unpleasantly disconnected feeling that I compare to being dipped in candle wax. So I can't in any way empathize with people who want to smoke legal marijuana.
Because when you drink your lager, gin, tequila, and vodka, nobody breaks down your door, shoots your dogs, takes away your children, locks you in a cage, fires you from your job, requires you to pee in a cup, and charges you with a crime that, once convicted, will act as a barrier to most of your educational and career goals. I agree. You just can't empathize with pot smokers because your more dangerous drug is legal.
It's when I think like a father that drugs bother me. For anybody with any sort of moral grounding, it's against the law is a powerful argument. And I want any ammunition I can get to argue against my son and daughter using drugs.
Because without that it's against the law argument, you don't really have any effective way of telling your children they shouldn't use marijuana or drugs? You must be terrible at gaining your kids' respect and trust with an honest conversation about marijuana. How are you ever going to convince them not to drink alcohol when it's so doggone legal? Well, I suppose you could tell them that they're under legal age, but then if marijuana was legal, you'd have that same legal age argument.
I've watched one person I know pass many a sleepless night worrying about a son with a methamphetamine problem. And I never want to experience what he's gone through. Using crack, meth, and other drugs has led people to sell their children and murder their parents. That's about as antisocial as you can get.
Wow, what a compelling set of arguments to make to your children against using crack, meth, and other drugs. Now, what does this have to do with marijuana?
They say it's not addictive. But I've watched it consume people's lives. They smoke pot, they hang out with people who smoke pot, and they talk to each other about smoking pot.
Robert, where did you drink your last American-style lager, occasional gin and tonic, margarita, or Bloody Mary? Were you hanging out with people who drink at the time? Did any of you talk about your favorite microbrews or how strong the drink was mixed?
And that's about all they're good for. It saps all ambition for anything but their next hit. I haven't spent the last 18 years raising children to watch either pot-smoking lethargy or life-destroying addiction ruin their potential or their lives.
Yes, we wouldn't want them to become lethargic slackers like Michael Phelps, Antonio Holmes, Plaxico Burress, Toby Greer, Sir Richard Branson, Carl Sagan, Willie Nelson, Sir Paul McCartney, President Obama, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, John Kerry, George Bush, or most of the NBA.
Police do enforce marijuana laws, and some of the jail space is devoted to marijuana users and dealers. Theoretically, if marijuana makes up 40% of drug arrests and incarcerations, law enforcement and corrections should be able to cut their drug enforcement budgets and personnel by 40% once marijuana is legalized. but police departments, sheriff's offices, and federal agencies are all part of the government. Anything governmental becomes bureaucratic, and bureaucrats never give money back to the taxpayers. Law enforcement will simply emphasize the need to refocus its efforts on the remaining illegal drugs, spend the same amount of money or more, and lock up just as many people.
Wait a minute. Are you really arguing against redirecting 40% of the drug enforcement budgets for law enforcement against the remaining illegal drugs and people actually committing violent personal and property crime?
The money and effort spent on enforcement is the only argument for legalizing drugs that offers any public benefit. Short of legalizing all drugs, I see no savings for the public. The question then becomes, are we prepared for the social problems that could result from uncontrolled drug use? We have experimented with that, and we know what the answer was. My instinct is that we would arrive at the same or that answer once more.
What we have now is uncontrolled drug use. Prohibition is the abdication of control over a popular market by the government. Here, criminals, lots of people like drugs, so why don't you handle all the manufacture, trafficking, and profits with no oversight or regulation? However, Robert, you never mention what the answer was, but by implication, I think you're referring to the counterculture of the 1960s. Don't legalize it, people! Do we really want to go back to bell bottoms and flower power? Left unchecked, in 10 years we could suffer another epidemic of disco fever! Hey, look, if legalization means less black-eyed peas and more Beatles, less auto-tuning and more actual tuning, and less computer synth and more guitars, we can't legalize soon enough. NormalCon 2009, Yes We Cannabis, September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy, the answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at
cannabis science.
We made it back to the middle of the week in time for our regular dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you.
All right. We've got a very interesting subject for today. I go through the regular news feeds that we get, and we get this story from the New Scientist in their health blog. And the headline here says, "Regular marijuana usage robs men of sexual highs." They studied over 8,000 Australians through a telephone poll and found that men who smoke marijuana daily are 4 times more likely to have trouble reaching orgasm than men who don't inhale. And the opposite problem happened to other smokers who had 3 times the rate of premature ejaculation. Sounds kind of odd to me that you'd have the problems on both ends of the spectrum, so to speak. But I was wondering what you knew about the research of male sexual function and regular cannabis use.
Sure, we've talked about this a little bit before, and this literature began in the 1970s when marijuana was getting more popular. Every man I know will swear that cannabis is in fact an aphrodisiac and that this increases desire, So I want to separate that from the findings here, which is that it, these guys are reporting delayed ejaculation. Basically, it's harder for them to ejaculate once they get going. So this is not some reference to how often you want to do it or how much you love it or anything like that, which is an interesting other set of topics with its own research literature. Delayed ejaculation, unfortunately, is also sometimes called retarded ejaculation, which is an expression I really don't endorse.
Yeah.
It's not anywhere near as common as erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation, which is its own set of problems. What I'm going to do is sort of talk about what I've seen clinically with this, as well as just what literature is out there. As you can imagine, you don't get a ton of complaints for this clinically. People don't come in and say, gee, the problem is I just last too long. Occasionally someone's partner will come in and make that complaint, and that seems to be part of the issue. But the diagnosis of this, if you will, isn't very specific. So it doesn't say, well, how long, you know, literally in minutes does it take for this to happen? And so we're not sure here if maybe there's just a subset of daily cannabis users who have an expectation about how fast this is supposed to happen that may be a little bit out of whack. There are a whole other set of drugs that I'm not sure if they've been able to assess in this study that also contributed to this. So a number of antidepressants make it really difficult to have an ejaculation at all.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that it would be delayed from those needs to be examined. Alcohol can have this effect. And a number of the stimulant drugs that these folks may be using but may not be getting asked about is also an important thing to keep in mind. I have to say clinically, and people are going to laugh, but what is often the case with these is these guys masturbate too hard. I really don't know how else to put it. A lot of them describe masturbation practices that just would basically suggest they were almost about to hurt themselves.
Mm.
And so a way to improve the speed of ejaculation is actually to not do these rushed, aggressive times with yourself, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
in order to make sure that you increase your sensitivity and basically make it so that a partner actually has a chance with some of these activities. And there are a few other things that seem to go with this. Also, just as people age, this time tends to generally increase, though not to the point of discomfort for a partner. A lot of folks also, particularly once they've got kids in the house or their lives are really busy, seem to be forced into these quickie situations where they really don't have enough time to warm up, to get excited, to have it be romantic and interesting. And then last but not least, these do show up in the midst of some interpersonal difficulties in the couple. So it's no surprise that this often comes up after somebody has found out, their partner is cheating on them, or, they've been fighting all week, or something like that. So the whole psychological aspects in the relationship are really important as well.
Hmm. As I read through this article in The New Scientist 2, I came upon the next couple of paragraphs, and one of them said, even though male smokers experience sexual problems, they reported more partners than non-smokers. Marijuana users were twice as likely to have two or more sex partners in the previous year, which kind of confused me as well, because I was thinking, well, if marijuana smoking supposedly led to these sexual problems, wouldn't women get the gist of this after a while and not want to sleep with marijuana smokers? And so for them to have more partners seems kind of counterintuitive.
It's odd, because the other side that's been reported is that people who discover they've got delayed ejaculation with one partner think, well, maybe it's just this relationship and I need to go find someone else. And often, just from novelty alone, we find alterations in sexual behavior. The well-known Coolidge effect. Calvin Coolidge was touring a big chicken farm and learned that there was only one rooster, and Mrs. Coolidge said, there's only one rooster for all these different hens, and he seems to be able to handle it, and tell the president that. And then the president came by and said, yeah, point out to my wife that it's a whole bunch of different chickens, chicken over and over. So, I mean, this novelty of partners certainly does seem to alter sexual function in just about any male of any species.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this also, the article also references a 2007 study from Cornell in New York that said that marijuana users were more likely to take Viagra recreationally. And their term here is that presumably this is to counteract the perceived libido-sapping effects of marijuana. I tended to think of it as people who like to take recreational drugs take recreational drugs.
In fact, this is probably a personality thing more than any kind of pharmacological phenomenon. I do want to caution our older listeners on this because cannabis does interfere with one of the enzymes that helps break down Viagra. Mm. So if you are going to use both at the same time, it's probably not that great an idea. And in all honesty, I feel like there's this big emphasis on orgasm itself, ejaculation itself, and people are missing out on a lot of the fun of sex if all they are doing is sort of trying to reach the goal. As I've, you know, said to clients with sexual problems, the point of a symphony isn't to get to the end. You know, this is about having a good time, not achieving something, shall we say.
Right. Now, on the other side here, on the female side, they noted that female smokers didn't seem to have any orgasm problems compared to non-smokers, but they did notice the trend of increased sexual activity of female smokers compared to non-smokers. And I thought this was kind of a strange way to note it, but they said that women who are marijuana smokers were 7 times more likely to have been diagnosed with an STD. Any comments on that idea?
In fact, this is also like the previous thing where it's probably an underlying sensation-seeking personality trait, not mm-hmm. anything to do with cannabis itself. When you look closely at data, particularly from women on do they use cannabis and do they have certain sexual practices, it often doesn't co-vary at the event level. It's not that they got high and then had sex. It's that people who like to happen to have a lot of partners are also people who like to use cannabis. It's not a single incident, so to speak.
Mm. It seems to go back to that correlation causation argument that we always talk about here in this interview segment, where we take a look at these, you know, people who smoke pot do X, Y, or Z, or do people that do X, Y, or Z just happen to like to smoke pot?
Well, and the obvious way to do this is let's all call up our partners tonight and get the longitudinal data going.
There we go. We'll do our own self-funded studies. Now, you mentioned also how so many people refer to marijuana as an aphrodisiac. Are there studies to back that up as far as people, you know, using marijuana to increase desire?
I mean, as you can imagine, there is not a lot of funding for this, but even back in 1971, Charlie Tart's classic science paper suggested that men in particular report enhanced orgasm. So the experience itself is improved. Men suggest that they last longer back in the 70s during sex, but we have to remember now that cannabis distorts our perception of time. So unless you've got a clock right by the bed, which I do not recommend, there's really no way to know that. And the, you know, aphrodisiac qualities are often, you know, what it's been praised for. And it goes all the way back to the book Arabian Nights. It actually has two tales where someone eats hash and ends up having an erection in an inordinate way and in an inopportune time. So, no, this is actually a legend that goes back to Arabic days.
Wow. Well, if only cannabis would distort the perception of length, that might be helpful. Oh, well, I think we've got as many puns and bad taste jokes as we could here in this segment, but for
what it's worth, just, you know, making sure folks don't have unrealistic expectations, and I don't mean to perseverate on this, but the not having these fast, forceful masturbation periods can definitely improve what anyone perceives as a delayed ejaculation in men.
Okay. And I wonder, you know, if there's any correlation with the marijuana use and masturbation that might have something to do with this.
So there aren't any data that have examined both those questions in the same data set. Given the notorious aphrodisiac legends, it wouldn't stun me that those co-vary. And general sexual activity and cannabis use is probably, again, part of that underlying sensation-seeking, love for adventure and thrills and things like that that may be the the third variable that explains both of these things mm-hmm. increasing.
Yeah. And with respect to other drugs that tend to be used recreationally, I imagine there's far more data on how they might affect sexual performance.
Well, so alcohol is a huge literature in sex, and alcohol use does seem to co-vary with unsafe sex. In particular, heavy doses does lead to erectile dysfunction. I mean, Shakespeare has quotes about that.
Yeah.
Essentially, the stimulants are the other one where it looks like methamphetamine and things like that really lead people to incredible desire and urges and sometimes difficulty reaching orgasm. But again, I'm not sure if this study measured those succinctly enough in order to really see if those are a good explanation for this finding.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting topic, and we'll keep taking questions on it. If you've got questions for Dr. Earlywine, just send them in to 420research@gmail.com, and we'll get them asked here on our regular Wednesday Cannabis Science segment. Dr. Earlywine, thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Looking forward to it.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. This Reggae Wednesday, we're listening to I Live My Life by Kaya Bamba from Switzerland. Popular band Kaya Bamba got their fame by playing at clubs and producing mixed CDs. They have since performed their mix of reggae, dancehall, and hip-hop music around the world. Kaya Bamba have played with top-class artists like Kali Buds, Buddha Monk from Wu-Tang, and many more. The group have produced music for a number of movies and released 5 mixed CDs. Kaya Bamba are currently working on their 6th mixed CD, due for release later this year. Stay tuned with Kaya Bamba at myspace.com/KayaBamba, that's K-Y-A-B-A-M-B-A, and registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's I Live My Life by Kaya Bamba.
Watch it up. I was say Kaya Bamba now. I was watching Killer B. I was watching Mike. I would tell him say, oh, around it represented to the fullest, you know. Hey, rhythm track. I would tell him say, ganja, we are smoke around here. I would tell him say, oh, welcome to the M. Aya. Smoke all the burn like tire. Kaya Bamba, what's it? Yo, I live my life the way I wanna. Kaya Bamba gonna drink anything and smoke marijuana. Don't take a trip with Killer a go a waste, man. Make with friends them, bring you in a this man. Grades you a get, you know, say it a the best one. Blaze the highest, a kill a main intention. So we meditate, but we mind not rest, man. He's all distressed, man. Yes, man. In a hit we invest, man. Couldn't be the least one. Now give me this to an next man. I live my life the way I wanna. Kia Bamba Ghana. Drink Hennessy and smoke marijuana. Straight to the sky, we no have no weed limit. Now see we a rum bar, a juice and gin it. Three whistler join up with high grade in it. Can't see we ice them, car high grade limit. Have it in the magazine, feds come off limit. Anyway, in the world, Kia we have to bring it. Now we chain our watch, sometime we rim it. How long we a go smoke, we tell them infinite. I live my life the way I wanna. Kia Bamba Ghana. Drink Hennessy and smoke marijuana.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
In preparation for the upcoming Normal National Conference, September 24th through 26th in San Francisco, California, we're featuring some of the interviews from our archives with people who will be attending the conference and speaking on the plenary panels. Speaking to close the conference this year is acclaimed European travel expert and PBS travel author, Rick Steves. The interview is conducted by Stash founder and original host, Chris Goldstein, from 2007.
Rick Steves is the internationally respected host, writer, and producer of the popular public television series Rick Steves Europe, and the best-selling author of 30 European travel books. He encourages Americans to delve deep into Europe and become temporary locals. Over the last 15 years, Rick has hosted over 100 travel shows for public television that began with travels in Europe with Rick Steves. Since then, he's become one of public television's top pledge drive hosts, raising millions of dollars annually for stations across the U.S. His current Rick Steves Europe TV series has grown to 59 half-hour shows, carried by 312 public television stations annually and reaching 95% of U.S. markets. Rick writes and co-produces his television programs through his company, Backdoor Productions. Rick also recently launched a weekly public radio program, Travel with Rick Steves. Pens columns for newspapers and magazines, is a contributing writer for ABCNews.com, and a regular on the op-ed page of USA Today. Rick Steves is also a dynamic social activist in the arenas of ending homelessness, environmental awareness, and decriminalizing marijuana. Rick sits on Normal's advisory board, and it's a true honor to sit down today with one of America's best ambassadors here on the Audio Stash. Rick, thanks again for joining us here on the program today. And first I have to ask, you're on Normal's advisory board. Why do you feel it's important to be personally involved with the issue of marijuana decriminalization and to get involved with Normal?
Well, I believe our society is embracing a lot of lies lately, and I'm just tired of people being kind of lacking courage when it comes to stepping out and saying the truth. And this can be issues of civil rights and war and peace or economic justice or whatever. And to me, just personally, I'm sort of offended by a war on marijuana that's based on lies and fear. And I think, to me, Normal is not a charity, but it's a service. It advocates for people who believe that adults have the right to use marijuana creatively in the privacy of their own homes. And I think that people who appreciate marijuana or people have friends that appreciate and enjoy marijuana and don't like the fact that Americans are being arrested for something that's about as thrilling as a bottle of beer in other countries, Normal provides a great service.
Of course, you spent a lot of time and still spend a lot of time over in Europe. Does spending that time overseas give you a different perspective on the United States and how we treat pot?
Yeah, when you travel, you learn a lot about your own country. And Europeans especially are really good at in a friendly way, expecting a lot of us and challenging us. And I just love to talk with Europeans about various social policy issues. And, you know, every country's got its drug problems, and people certainly shouldn't think that because I would support Normal's work that I'm an advocate of drug abuse. You know, I should make it really clear. Reforming marijuana laws has nothing to do with letting kids have access to marijuana. It has nothing to do with lightening up on the approach to hard drug abuse. In fact, it's not drug abuse at all. Nobody's saying we should just open the gates and let people drive under the influence of pot any more than they're saying drive under the influence of alcohol. There's just a sane approach to marijuana, and that, I think, is borne out by the track record that European countries have had after the last decade of not arresting people for smoking pot. I think in the Netherlands they've got a very nice approach to this. In the Netherlands and in much of Europe, they really believe that a society has to make a choice, tolerate alternative lifestyles or build more prisons. And then they'll tell me right after that, in America has more people in prison per capita than I think any other developed and civilized nation.
And since you have been vocal on the topic of marijuana here in the U.S., are you getting questions from folks when you travel overseas about U.S. policy? And, you know, what kind of questions are you getting maybe from the Europeans?
Well, Europeans are put off by a lot of righteousness by the United States. You know, they think we can have whatever sort of moral hang-ups or concerns that we want to have, but they don't understand why we have to inflict those ideals on other countries. We're so judgmental, and they're not judgmental of us as we are judgmental of them. I've got friends in Denmark that tell me every year they have to arrest a couple of pot smokers simply to maintain favored trade status with the United States. You know, this is just flat-out embarrassing if my country requires other countries to arrest pot smokers. I mean, pot, you know, the war on marijuana in our country is a political farce. And, you know, we've got a lot of things that we do for political purposes in our country, and that's our own problem. But to come down hard on our allies and other nations that have a more logical approach to these issues, to me it's just... it's embarrassing. So it's kind of hard to defend America's policy to a lot of things when you travel around Europe.
Now, Rick, you're out on the West Coast where we've seen a big change in the medical use issue. But how would you like to see marijuana laws sort of change overall in America?
Well, I'm in Seattle, and I'm not really into medical use of marijuana. I mean, I think it's sort of obvious that America has politicized science and medicine right now in our government. Scientists and doctors, their voices are heard only if they're giving answers that the administration wants to hear. It's reminiscent of what was going on in Germany in the 1930s, which is an unfortunate parallel to make, but it's too often it comes around to that. Frankly, I think talking about medical marijuana is it's just not for me. I'm talking about responsible use of recreational marijuana for adults, not for kids. If everybody in Seattle who smoked marijuana for recreational purposes was arrested tomorrow by a more effective war on marijuana waged by our government, Seattle overnight would become a much less interesting place. It would be a tragedy. And I think people who smoke pot and people who don't smoke pot would agree with me in that regard. I'd be out of business tomorrow if everybody who smokes pot was arrested. And I just think it's, if people knew, if these warriors against marijuana knew how many people they respect and love actually smoke pot recreationally, they'd be appalled. I know that from my own experience.
And in Amsterdam, the model allows people to purchase marijuana for recreational use. Here in the States, one of the big arguments is that if we legalize marijuana, everyone will just go out and grow it. But do you see that as the case happening over there in Holland?
Well, you know, carrots are legal, and I choose not to grow them. I buy them. I mean, I don't see any reason why if marijuana was legal, I would treat it any different than apples or carrots. I think the great thing about decriminalizing marijuana in the European model is then law enforcement people know where the marijuana is. They have a great opportunity to create a firewall between soft drugs and the abuse of hard drugs. Crusty, conservative law enforcement anti-drug types in Europe, after a 10-year track record, agree that it is smart if your drug policy is designed to in the interest of harm reduction, they agree that decriminalization is a smart move. Use does not go up I think use goes up among what is the deal? Short-term users, it goes up for a little while, but long-term, people settle into the lifestyle they're going to have anyways. Point is, use of marijuana among teens certainly doesn't go up because it's not legal. Use among adults does not go up remarkably. And I think there's a lot of Americans that think if marijuana was legalized, there'd be a floodgate of people who just want to ruin their lives by abusing drugs that would come out of the closets and screw themselves up. And Europe has found that this just isn't the case. It takes the crime out of marijuana. As soon as it becomes legal, there's no price goes way down. I mean, in Europe, you buy a little bag of marijuana for about the cost of a glass of wine, and you sit there, listen to great music in a wonderful pub-like ambience, if you choose, or you get your pot to go and you take it home with your friends. You don't see people wasted on the streets because of this or anything like that. You just don't have people driven into criminal activities to sell or support or target children, and you certainly don't have the cost to society of keeping 80,000 people in jail as we do today in the United States. Right now there's 80,000 people like you and me in jail because they were not very good at hiding their marijuana use.
Rick, as an advocate of reform here in the United States, where do you see the marijuana legalization movement right now? And what could maybe spur it along a bit?
Frankly, I'm pretty discouraged because I've never had less faith in the intelligence of the American electorate. Half of us, I guess, are basing our political stances on the belief that Armageddon's just around the corner. Half of us really believe that Saddam had something to do with 9/11. I mean, a major part of us believe that tears cause AIDS. There's so much fear and misunderstanding and political cowardice. This is an important fight to wage, but fear and the ease at which we allow the media to manipulate our perceptions on things is discouraging. I'm supporting Normal enthusiastically, and people like Norm Stamford are doing great things to bring attention to the fact that this is as harmful to our society as prohibition was in the 1930s. It took courageous people to break down the prohibition against alcohol in the 1930s, and when they did stop prohibition in the 1930s, it wasn't a societal declaration that alcohol is good. It was a declaration or a realization that it's stupid to criminalize people that want to drink beer and liquor. There's a huge difference there. And if Normal can get that idea across, we're not saying drugs are good. We're saying if you're interested in a drug policy that reduces harm to society, it makes more sense to treat marijuana as a medical problem rather than a criminal one. That's a pretty simple idea to get across. And I've had quite a bit of opportunity to talk in different radio shows and TV shows about this. And the astounding thing is, when you have enough attention span from your listeners to explain that you're not in favor of drug abuse, you don't want kids to be smoking pot and all this kind of thing, people go right on. That's very sensible. People of all political persuasions can actually see the common sense of this. But that's the trick, is to get people to listen long enough. I'm interested in this just from what kind of splash it causes me in my business and so on. If I say something anti-war, I get a lot of flack and a lot of angry people. If I say something anti-war on drugs, I get people across the political spectrum saying right on. And that was courageous, and I just kind of have to think, why does it have to be courageous to talk this kind of common sense?
Rick, are you surprised by those overall attitudes in American society right now that'll give you a backlash for an anti-war message and then this positive response for an anti-drug war message?
Yeah, I am surprised at that. And so have people on, I've been on these, local affairs, political affairs shows, on local public television stations and so on. And it was scary. Rick's going to talk about marijuana. You know, every time I do an interview, when the camera stops, the cameraman, the director, and the producer, they all wink and go right on. Boy, I'm glad you can say that. If we said that, we'd be out of a job in a hurry. You know, it's just that's the way it is. It's this, the whole media is kind of wink, wink, yeah, we're with you, but we can't say it or we'll lose our job. Teachers, when the DARE officer comes, that you can hear a pin drop in the teacher lounge because teachers cannot question the propaganda if they care about their own job security. It's a weird kind of atmosphere. And when I do speak out, because people don't need to vote for me, and if people are going to hear what I think about marijuana and they're going to not go on my tours, I think that's just probably a blessing, because I'd probably not want to travel with people like that. So I don't really care if people boycott me because of my comments on marijuana. I think it's very interesting, and it's surprising to the TV stations and the radio stations what kind of positive feedback there is when somebody says, "So Rick Steves, are you a pothead?" And I say, "Well, I don't think you should arrest marijuana for people for smoking marijuana, and I think this country would be a lot more boring if everybody who smoked pot was in jail." So I think it's, I think there's, in that regard, I think, Chris, there's a lot of hope for raising awareness of this issue and making some progress. But politicians need to understand this. In fact, this is what Normal is doing in a little initiative with me right now, is we are collecting the feedback I got from one of my TV interviews, which was virtually 100% supportive, and letting politicians know that it's not political suicide to be courageous on this issue. It's actually a plus. If you have any integrity, it's just a matter of truthfulness. But even if you're a political opportunist, you're not cutting your throat by talking about marijuana if you can keep people listening to understand that you're not soft on drug abuse. You're just smart on drug policy.
Rick, a deep thanks for your work out there, both in travel and with Normal's advisory board, and thanks for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Hey, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and good luck in keeping this discussion going.
Rick Steves, host, writer, and producer of the public television series Rick Steves Europe, best-selling author of 30 European travel books. You can find out more about all of that and his new public radio program, Travel with Rick Steves, up on his website at ricksteves.com.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another reminder about the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest that's taking place this Saturday. You
questions, you've only got two more days left to get your pledge in. Just send an email to stash@normal.org with the subject Hot Wings Pledge, and we'll be sure to get you noted up there on the Stash. Hoping to break $1,000 before we get to the contest. Make it worth it for all the pain and suffering I'll be going through, both at the contest and, I'm told, about 4 hours later. We'll be videotaping the contest as well for posting on stash.normal.org and on the Normal YouTube channel, so you can laugh your way through the footage as well. I'm told these wings are exceptionally hot, and while I'm someone who really likes hot foods, I don't know, 20 hot wings? Could be a challenge. We'll just have to see. Also, Normal Show Live goes on the air Saturday, September 5th. This will be our first live show, and we hope to be having Toby Greer, the mixed martial artist, on the show, as well as guests from the local Oregon cannabis community, plus our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine appearing on the show. So check it all out when we go up live. You can check out the page right now at blogtalkradio.com/normal. And speaking of the show, we've been playing these clips that we'll be using, hopefully, if we get our licensing, for our liners. And this one is one I hope you enjoy from President Barack Obama. Just give you a little flavor of what the show will be like. So until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Look, when I was a kid, I
won't talk over the line, sweet Jesus.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal. This is Normal Show Live.
Sitting downtown in a railway.